because when the...
Incidentally, those quotes that we put up on the screen yesterday relative to the Eastern Roman Empire and the Byzantine Empire, also the Eastern Foot Period, and particularly Russia's participation in that, were all those quotes were cited in this little book, Milestones to the Kingdom 1983 by Graham Pierce. It's an excellent little book, and I think it's still in print and can be obtained from the Detroit Library. Okay, we're still discussing Daniel's fourth beast. Daniel's fourth beast. Yesterday we concluded that the brass claws of the fourth Roman beast depicted or signified the same events as those indicated in the eastern foot period of the image, namely the events in the eastern half of the Roman Empire from 1453 and on. We also concluded that the ten horns atop the head of the fourth Roman beast depicted or signified the same events as those indicated by the western foot period of Nebuchadnezzar's image, namely those events in the western half of the Roman world from 476 A.D. and on. Now today we'd like to talk about this little horn that came up among the ten horns. Now we would ask that you please turn to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 24. First of all, we note that according to verse 24, the little horn was to arise after the ten horn kingdoms were established. The verse says, another shall arise after them. Also, according to verse 8, the little horn was to have its territory in the same area as that occupied by the ten horns. The verse says, there came up among them another little horn. And according to verse 24, this little horn was a horn, meaning quite simply it was a kingdom. The verse says, and another shall arise, meaning of course another horn kingdom. And finally, it was nevertheless a little horn, meaning, of course, that it was a little kingdom. And according to verse 24, it was diverse or different from the other ten horns. Now, what we'd like to do is take a very brief look at history and see just what power is represented by this little horn. When the Western Roman Empire fell in 476 and went into her foot period, a certain power which had been growing in political clout for many, many years began to really come into its own. In the centuries between 476 and 756, papal power and influence, both religious and political, was on the increase. As we mentioned earlier in the week, in 533, the Eastern Roman Emperor Justinian proclaimed the papacy, or the Bishop of Rome, to be head over Christendom. And he also granted him authority over certain municipal and provisional governments in the western half of the Roman world. In 590 to 604 A.D., Pope Gregory the Great expanded papal power and influence by assuming the role of Emperor of the West. But brothers and sisters, if there is any date that marks the establishment of the papal power as a horn kingdom, a horn kingdom. It has to be 756 A.D. when the Frankish king Pepin made what has become known as the Donation of Pepin. In the words of William Langer, the author of this Encyclopedia of World History, the Donation of Pepin, quote, was a tacit recognition of the implicit claims of the popes to be heirs of the empire in Italy, and was the foundation of the Papal States and the true beginning of the temporal power of the papacy, end quote. So in this, brethren, we can see the fulfillment of what is said concerning this little horn. The papacy was not established as a temporal power or a horn kingdom until 756 A.D., by which time all of the ten horns had been firmly established. However, because the territory the papacy occupied was only a small part of Italy, namely these papal states, it was, as the prophecy requires, a little horn. Italy was, of course, part of the territory of the old Western Roman Empire, so this little horn indeed came up among them, again, as the prophecy requires. And finally, the Pope, as a spiritual leader and a temporal monarch, was diverse or different from the ten horns in that his claim to have spiritual dominion over them made him so. All of this was fulfilled by the papacy. By the papacy, during the years which followed the fall of Western Rome in 476, it continued on during the 1,000 years Holy Roman Empire period, and we would submit to you that it even continues on to a very large degree unto our very day. Now, we'd like to consider the mouth of this little horn, the mouth. We'd like to read verses 8, 11, and 25. Verse 8, I consider the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. Verse 11, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Verse 25, and he, speaking of this little horn, shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand, that is, into the hand of this little horn, until a time, times, and the dividing of time. Now, in these verses, we are informed that the little horn had a mouth that spake very great things, and that he shall speak words against the Most High and shall think to change times and laws. Now, brothers and sisters, has this been fulfilled by the papacy? Well, let's see if it has. First, let's consider this mouth that spake very great things. I think we would all agree that the claims of the papacy have been incredible, to say the least. We do have several of them listed in our notes, but I think we'd like to talk about just one of them, and that's a claim made by Pope Boniface VIII. Pope Boniface VIII, this guy made very, very great claims. He said that we declare it to be necessary to salvation. We consider it to be necessary to salvation that every living being, every living person should be subject to the Roman Pontiff. Now let me tell you, brothers and sisters, this is a mouth that spake very great things. After all, what greater claim could anyone make than that of supremacy over every living person? Such claims are clearly speaking words against the Most High. Why? Because God has given His Son, Jesus Christ, this authority, and certainly not the papacy. All power has been given unto me in heaven and in earth, saith the anointed Son of God. And the Apostle Paul said that God has highly exalted Jesus and has given Him the name which is above all names, but certainly not the papacy. Now, part and parcel to this speaking great things, in verse 25 we find that the little horn also thinks to change times and laws. To change times and laws. Has this, brothers and sisters, been fulfilled by the papacy? Well, Pope Innocent III said, quote, "We can dispense from law according to our plenitude of power over law," end quote. And in the book, The Approaching End of the Age, by H. Grattan Guinness, we find a couple of papal statements to this effect that I think you will find very, very interesting. In the book, The Approaching End of the Age, Grattan Guinness has this to say, and what he's doing, he is citing a couple of papal statements. Quote, "Wherefore, no marvel if it be in my powers to change times and times, to alter and abrogate laws, to dispense with all things, yea, with the precepts of Christ. For where Christ biddeth Peter to put up his sword, and admonishes his disciples not to use any outward force in avenging themselves, do not I, Pope Nicholas, writing to the bishops of France, exhort them to draw out their material swords? And whereas Christ was present himself at the marriage of Cana of Galilee, do not I, Pope Martin, in my distinction inhibit the spiritual clergy to be present at marriage feasts and also to marry? Moreover, where Christ biddeth us to lend without hope of gain, do not I, Pope Martin, give dispensation for the same?" So I think we can see, brothers and sisters, that the papal power, the papal power as this little horn, did indeed seek to change times and laws. Now, in the verses we've just read, particularly verses 21 and 25, we find that the little horn made war with the saints of the Most High, that he wore them out, that he prevailed against them. Now, has this been fulfilled by the papal system? Well, of course, brethren, we all know that it has. Thanks to the efforts of Brother Alan Ayer in his two books, The Protesters and The Brethren in Christ, we now have good evidence of the existence of those who embraced the truth during the papal inquisition years and who were persecuted for it by the papal system. Now, in these verses, we are also informed that the little horn power, the papal power, would prevail over the saints until it was destroyed by the multitudinous Christ. And not only that, we are also given a definite period of time during which this little papal horn would be allowed to prevail. In verse 25, we are told it would prevail a time, times, and the dividing of time. Or as the Revised Standard Version has it, a time, two times, and a half time, thus making a total of 3.5 times. So in other words, the little papal horn would be allowed to prevail over the saints of the Most High to make war with them for 3.5 times. At the close of the 3.5 times, the little papal horn of this fourth Roman beast would be destroyed by the multitudinous Christ. Now, I suppose the question we should address is this. What exactly does the Bible mean by 3.5 times? What does the Bible mean by 3.5 times? Anyone?
1260 years.
Okay, 1260 years. How do we know? Okay, would anyone care to add to Brother Jim's comments? Okay, so one time would be a period of 360 days times 3.5 would give us 1,260 years. And on the day per year principle, that gives us 1,260 years, does it not? We agree wholeheartedly with that explanation. There are several ways to arrive at that, and we'd like to share just one of them with you. Please turn with me to the Apocalypse chapter 12. The Apocalypse chapter 12, verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days, or 1,260 days. Now, please skip down to verse 14. And to the woman were given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and a half time, or 3.5 times. Now, according to Brother Mansfield in the Apocalypse Epitomized, these two verses, verses 6 and 14, are speaking of the same event. This being the case, it is easy to see how the 3.5 times of verse 14 correspond exactly to the 1,260 days of verse 6. So 3.5 times equals 1,260 days. But since we're thinking in terms of a prophecy here in Daniel, brothers and sisters, we must convert the 1,260 days to 1,260 years using the day-for-a-year principle. So what do we have? The papal power, the little horn power, would be allowed to make war against the saints, to prevail against the saints, for 1,260 years. At the close of the 1,260 years, this little papal horn would be destroyed by the multitudinous Christ. Now, we'd like to look at a few possibilities regarding the fulfillment of this 1,260 year period, this period during which the little papal horn would be allowed to make war against the saints. But before we do that, perhaps we should say something about this day for a year principle. Lest any of us should think that the day for a year principle is something Christadelphians have kind of cooked up just to satisfy our own prophetic interpretations. It might do us all well to very briefly consider the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9, the 70 weeks. The prophecy of Daniel chapter 9, brothers and sisters, is a prophecy that has, for the most part, been fulfilled. I think we'd all agree to that. It's a prophecy that we can look back on and we can see precisely how it was fulfilled. And the point we'd like to make is this. The fulfillment of the 70 weeks prophecy was absolutely dependent upon the day for a year principle. Without it, brothers and sisters, it will not work. It won't even come close. So indeed, the day for a year principle is scripturally sound. And incidentally, it can be gleaned from Numbers chapter 14. I think it's verse 34. And also Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 6. Now, we'd like to look at a few possibilities regarding the fulfillment of this 1260-year period. Now, we'd like to say that these dates are not new. They've been around the Brotherhood for years, and perhaps most of you are familiar with them. Okay, the first possibility, a possible beginning point for the papal horn to commence this war against the saints, could be 533 A.D. Now, what happened in 533 A.D.? Well, we've already discussed this. This was the year that the Eastern Roman Emperor Justinian proclaimed the papacy to be the universal authority over Christendom. And during the reign of Justinian, the papacy was given temporal control over some areas in the western half of the Roman world. So if we add 1260 years to that, it brings us to 1793. Now, what happened in 1793? Well, this was the year that witnessed or brought us to the French Revolution, which indeed caused a great tumult to Catholicism in France. Now, let's consider another possibility. Another possible beginning point for this little papal horn to prevail over the saints of the Most High is 607 A.D. Now, during the year 607, the Eastern Roman Emperor Phocas, he made a very similar decree to that of Justinian in that he too proclaimed the Pope to be the universal authority over Christendom. So if you add 1260 years to that, it brings us to 1867. Now, what happened in 1867? Again, we've already discussed that. It was during this period that Garibaldi was conducting this invasion of the Papal States. The Papal States, again, being the territories in central Italy, including the city of Rome, over which the papacy ruled. Garibaldi, though, wasn't able to achieve victory over papal armies until 1870. So again, that's also one possibility. If you add 1260 to 607, it brings us to 1867, the 1867-1870 period. Now let's look at another possibility. Another possible beginning point for the papal horn to make war against the saints, and incidentally, don't necessarily limit that to physical persecution. 1756 would be a good beginning point. During 1756, we have this donation of Pepin, which again we have discussed. The donation of Pepin, which firmly established the papacy as a horn kingdom. So if we add 1260 years to that, it brings us to 2016 A.D., about 30 years away. 2016. And the question we would ask each of you is this: will 2016 witness the total destruction of the little papal horn kingdom by the multitudinous Christ. We commend it to your consideration. Now, we are running behind in our material, and I'm afraid we're going to have to skip over a couple of the other points relative to this little horn. But there are a few, at least one, I guess, that we should perhaps touch upon before we move on to something else. What about these three horns that the papacy, or this little papal horn, supposedly overthrew? This we find in verses 8, 20, and 24. Well, we will suggest that these three horns represent three kingdoms which were subdued by Charlemagne. Incidentally, Charlemagne was the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. Although this activity that we're going to discuss was done just a little prior to the establishment of that Holy Roman Empire period. The three horns represented three kingdoms which were overthrown by Charlemagne. The Lombards in 774, the Bavarians in 788, and the Avars in 796. Now, all three of these kingdoms are horn kingdoms, as we mentioned earlier in the week. Although by the time of this overthrow by Charlemagne, the Avars had replaced the Gepids and thus occupied their horn territory. But, of course, it's not all that easy, for there is an objection for us to consider. Do not the verses indicate that the papacy would personally overthrow these three horns, rather than Charlemagne? Well, it would seem so, but let's take a look at the verses. First, verse 8. There came up among them another little horn. Now listen to this. Before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up. Before whom? Now look at verse 20. And of the ten horns that were in his head, speaking of course of the fourth Roman beast, and of the other, that's the little horn, which came up, and before whom three fell. Before whom three fell. Now, from these verses, it is clear that the little papal horn did not personally overthrow the three horns. The words before whom in verses 8 and 20 would indicate otherwise. Namely, that the work of the overthrow was done before, or in the presence of, before the little horn, and not by the little horn itself. But what about verse 24? And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another being this little horn, shall arise after them. And he, the little horn, shall be diverse from the first. And he, the little horn, shall subdue three kings. What about this little horn, this little papal horn, subduing three kings? Well, the word subdue in verse 24 can also be translated to humble or abase. To humble or abase. And indeed, it has been so translated in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 37. So, the Pope did not directly overthrow the three horns. Charlemagne did it for him. The three kingdoms were abased or humiliated on behalf of the papacy during the time when the papal power was being firmly established as a horn kingdom, preparatory to the Holy Roman Empire period. Now, in conclusion, it is clear from verse 11 that the Roman beast system, the Roman beast with 10 horns, little horn, and brass claws, exist at the time of Christ's return. I beheld at that time, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even until the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and he was given to the burning flame. Verse 22 indicates that the little horn of the Roman beast prevailed until the Ancient of Days came and the judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. And so, brothers and sisters, it is clear that the fourth Roman beast, the latter-day enemy of the truth, will come to her end, being destroyed by the multitudinous Christ. Now, in summary, the Roman legs of iron and the feet of iron and clay in Daniel chapter 2, and Daniel's fourth beast with 10 horns, little horn, and brass claws, both represent the same identical system, the Roman system. It is a system extant at the time of the end, at the time of the second advent, and it is to be destroyed by the multitudinous Christ, preparatory to the establishment of the kingdom of God upon this earth. Now, how does all of this information gleaned from Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 7, how does it provide us with the master key to unlocking the identity of the beast system of the apocalypse? To unlocking the identity of that system which we must be separate from? This question we would now like to address. The prophet Daniel commenced his prophecy during the period of the Babylonian head of gold in about 604 B.C. And his interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream indicated that four humanly governed world empires would follow one another in succession. Four world empires would follow one another in succession, with the fourth and final, the Roman Empire, undergoing a number of changes, before its total destruction by the fifth world empire, the Kingdom of God, the stone that would smite the image in the feet. Now the four beasts of Daniel chapter 7 correspond exactly to the four metals or the four world empires of the image of Daniel chapter 2, with the fourth beast, the fourth and final beast, being, of course, Rome. Now, the point we'd like to make is this. The Apostle John, who received the Apocalypse. The Apostle John received and recorded the Apocalypse during the fourth Roman beast period, during the Roman legs of iron period, the fourth Roman beast period. In other words, when the Apostle John received and recorded the Apocalypse, Rome reigned supreme. All of the other world empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, they had already passed off the scene. Therefore, since John received and recorded the Apocalypse during this fourth Roman beast period, and he wrote of religious and political events that would shortly come to pass, Revelation 1:1, then it only makes sense, brothers and sisters, that his prophecy, the Apocalypse, would cover events from his day, 96 A.D., all the way up to the time of the establishment of the kingdom. And in so doing, these events would correspond to the religious and political events indicated in the varying stages of Daniel's fourth and final Roman beast, that Roman beast that carries us all the way up to the time of the second advent and the kingdom of God. Now that's a mouthful. I want to repeat it because it is vital that we make the connection. In fact, we're going to put it on the overhead. I hope that each of you will write it down and think about it. The Apostle John received and recorded the Apocalypse during the fourth Roman beast period. Therefore, since John wrote during this Roman period, and he wrote of religious and political events that would shortly come to pass, Revelation 1:1, then it only makes sense that his prophecy, the Apocalypse, would cover religious and political events from his day, 96 A.D., until the time of the establishment of the kingdom. And in so doing, these events would correspond with the religious and political developments indicated in the varying stages of Daniel's fourth Roman beast. Indeed, brothers and sisters, when we carefully examine the characteristics of Daniel's fourth Roman beast, when we compare these characteristics with the four beasts of the Apocalypse, or with the beasts of the Apocalypse, it becomes very, very evident that they all represent the same system, namely the Roman system. Has everyone finished with this?
No.
Okay. Okay, we're going to have to move on because we're running short of time. I'll put this back up at the end of the class if anyone would like to finish. We want to reinforce this. Now, this is rather small, and perhaps some of you cannot see it in the back. We'll try to be as clear as possible. This is a chart, which, by the way, comes from a book entitled The Revelation, Which Interpretation? An excellent book. Everybody should read it. The chart is basically a comparison study of Daniel's fourth beast with the beast of the Apocalypse. Now, first of all, we find that Daniel's fourth beast had 10 horns, persecutes the saints, persecutes 1,260 years, it blasphemes God, it's judged at the time of the kingdom, the saints assist in its destruction, and it's destroyed by flames. Now, how does Daniel's fourth Roman beast compare with the beasts of the apocalypse? Well, we find the first manifestation of Daniel's fourth beast in the Apocalypse chapter 12, where it is described as a great red dragon. And note the similarities. The great red dragon has 10 horns, it persecutes the saints, and it persecutes 1,260 years. Now, the great red dragon was symbolic of the pagan Roman Empire from John's day, about 96 A.D., to roughly 320. Now, the apocalypse, brothers and sisters, is not a disorganized, chaotic book. It is rather carefully divided into 7 seals, 7 trumpets, 7 vials, and 7 thunders. Now, since John wrote during the fourth Roman beast period, recorded the apocalypse during the fourth Roman beast period, and since he wrote of religious and political events that would shortly come to pass, then it only makes good common sense that the seals would depict events in the Roman Empire that would lead up to a change in its character, that the seals would depict events to take place immediately upon the Roman world. And indeed, brethren, the seals do this very thing, as they depict events in the Roman Empire that would lead up to a change in her character, namely from a pagan Roman Empire to a pseudo-Christian Roman Empire. This period would take us from 96 A.D. to roughly 320 A.D., at which time this great red dragon would become Christianized, so to speak. Now, this brings us to the trumpets. The trumpets generally depict events in this pseudo-Christian Roman dragon that would lead up to her end in the west in 476, which we've already discussed, and in the east in 1453. Now, when the Roman Empire goes into her foot period in 476, we find a change in the character of Daniel's fourth Roman beast as it becomes the beast of the sea. And note the similarities between it and Daniel's fourth beast. The beast of the sea has 10 horns, it persecutes the saints, it persecutes 1,260 years, and it blasphemes God. Now, when we approach the Holy Roman Empire period, about 800 A.D., we find another change in the character of Daniel's fourth beast, as it becomes the beast of the earth, and with 2 horns, which we don't have noted on the chart. Now, the fact that it has 2 horns is expressive of a couple of things. One, that there would be an ecclesiastical power ruling in the western half of the Roman world, and 2, that there would be a political power ruling in the western half of the Roman world during this Holy Roman Empire period. And indeed, brothers and sisters, history will bear this out, as we did discuss earlier in the week. The question might be asked, though, why does the chart not show any similarities between the beast of the earth and Daniel's fourth beast, other than the fact that they both persecute the saints? Well, we're not going to look at it today, but you can look at it at your leisure. Take a look at the Apocalypse chapter 13, and you will see that the beast of the earth was given all of the power and authority of the beast of the sea. So therefore, the similarities would be basically the same. Now, the Holy Roman Empire period takes us from 800 A.D. to about 1809, roughly 1,000 years. This brings us to the vials. Now, the vials depict the events that have to do with the destruction of this Holy Roman Empire system. A task which was performed by the Napoleonic Wars. But that's not all the vials have to do with. Among other things, the vials also lead us up to the final manifestation of Daniel's fourth Roman beast, the scarlet-colored beast, which is, brothers and sisters, the posture that Daniel's fourth beast assumes at the time of the end, at the time of the second advent. And please note the similarities between the scarlet-colored beast and Daniel's fourth beast. They are exceedingly striking. The scarlet-colored beast has 10 horns. It persecutes the saints. It doesn't persecute 1,260 years because we're at the time of the end, aren't we? It blasphemes God. It's judged at the time of the kingdom. The saints assist in its destruction, and it's destroyed by flames. So, we will suggest to you that the apocalyptic beasts set out in greater detail, the history of Daniel's fourth Roman beast. They do, in fact, represent successive phases of Rome from John's day, 96 AD, all the way up to the time of the establishment of the kingdom. Now, our classes are not really going to cover the apocalypse in great detail. Time will simply not permit. What we have attempted to do is to provide a foundation from which to understand the apocalypse, and particularly to identify a certain beast system, which according to the Apocalypse chapter 20 and verse 4, we must be separate from if we hope to gain acceptance at the judgment seat of Christ. For those of you who would like to pursue a study in the apocalypse, we recommend The Apocalypse Epitomized by H.P. Mansfield, An Exposition of Daniel, Help Us Israel, and Eureka by Brother Thomas. Now, we're out of time, and Lord willing, tomorrow we will address a question that we asked earlier in the week. And the question is this: is it possible that we, as 20th century believers, is it possible that we could be identified with this beast system? Lord willing, we'll tackle that one tomorrow.